You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, look, as always, man, I hope everybody had a great week. It's been crazy, man, with this weather. I know a lot of places, a lot of cities are dealing with these snowstorms. And ice on the roads, people are without power in certain areas and things like that, man. So definitely thoughts and prayers out to you all. I hope those who hadn't had power regain the power and everything like that. I know, you know, down here in Atlanta, we actually last weekend we're expecting some snow. We had up to like 60-70% chances of snow heading into the weekend. And so we went to the store, me and my girlfriend, my brother, like a few other, my friends, that people that I know that were, you know, out, you know, at the stores, just stocking up on snacks and different things just to prepare. And it didn't snow. So we were pretty bummed and upset about that just because, you know, we were looking forward to seeing some snow. Last year we did have snow happened, and you know, it actually turned around and snowed for a second time, which we did not expect, which was pretty cool because we got a chance to go out there and, you know, make the snowman and everything like that. So but unfortunately we have not seen snow yet down on the south end of Georgia. Now the north side of Georgia, they ended up getting some snow, but again, we have not seen any. So hopefully we will see some snow at some point in time. And hey, you know, we'll keep hope alive until there's no more, right? but with that being said, definitely want to go ahead and kick into our topics for today, because this is the time, you know, a year that, you know, I've hinted towards this. The football season is coming to an end. College football is already wrapped up. With Indiana and Miami facing off in the national championship game, Indiana knocking Miami off in a pretty good actually game. Second half wise, that first half was pretty boring, but the second half was pretty interesting. Miami actually had an opportunity to go down and win that game, but Carson Beck threw up in a horrible pass for whatever reason. I don't know, but we know, you know, that's the Carson Beck that we've seen. You know, he is prone to turn the ball over. And for whatever reason, they went for the home run ball and Indiana picked it off and sealed the deal and won the national championship. So, you know, never would I have thought that I would have seen Indiana play in the national championship and win a national championship. They finished an undefeated season. And, you know, I'm still... You know, I'm going to give my opinion on this. You know, no matter what, they did find a loophole in the system. They had 5th and 6th year seniors, 24, 25, going on 26 years old, playing against 18 and 19 year olds, right? And 20 year olds. It's just, I really just think that we need to pump the brakes when we're talking about, oh, is this the greatest college football season ever? I've seen people say that and about this team, and you know, I would disagree with that. You know, going undefeated is cool. Winning the national championship is cool. They were the most disciplined team in football. But at the same time, you know, I have a hard time just crowning them as the best college football team ever, because they had a bunch of 5th and 6th year seniors. You know, I don't know. That's just me. And I know that there are a lot of people out there that agree with that. So, again, but congrats to them, Kirsten Yeti. Hats off to him, you know, under the Nick Saban coaching tree. His time he spent at Alabama, he got an opportunity to learn under Nick Saban and, you know, went a few other, you know, places before ending up in Indiana, excuse me, and did a heck of a job, man, getting his team there to the playoff the first year he was there. And then over the hump in the second year. But I still, you know, again, I said this about Michigan and their run that they had when they won the national championship game with all of the talent that's leaving Indiana and all of those, you know, super seniors that they have. I don't see them doing that again. I still think they'll be a disciplined team, but I don't see them repeating what they did again. We saw, again, Michigan was a one-hit wonder. I think the same thing will be for Indiana. But for now, they are the kings of college football until next season. So, yeah, hats off to them. But with that being said, man, let's talk about the Super Bowl because the NFL season is coming to an end as well. Kind of want to cry right now, but I'm holding it together. No, I'm playing. But, you know, it's obviously bittersweet, man. Football is my favorite sport and a lot of our favorite sports. So, you know, the fact that it's coming to an end for the next 7 months, it's like, dang. But, you know, it's all good, man. It's all good. But Super Bowl 60 matchup, New England Patriots, Seattle Seahawks. This game is going to be not this Sunday, but next Sunday. Super Bowl Sunday is on February the 8th. Again, we always get a break before, a week break before the Super Bowl because they have the Pro Bowl games now that they're doing, which I don't even tune into the Pro Bowl games or anything like that. It's just, I don't know. The Pro Bowl is not exciting. The games, you know, here and there is cool to watch, but flag football for the Pro Bowl game is just, I don't know. That's just a joke to me. But again, let's talk about the Super Bowl. So again, Seahawks versus the Patriots. Both of these teams finished at 14-3 on the year. This game is going to be kicking off at 6:30 again on February the 8th. It'll be broadcasted on NBC and Peacock. The Seahawks are a 4.5-point favorite in this matchup. The over under is 45.5. So let's talk about how we got here, right? So the Seattle Seahawks, we'll start with them. They earned and locked up the number one seed with a huge road win at the end of the year against the San Francisco 49ers to give them that first round bye in the NFC. They ended up rematching with the 49ers in the divisional round where they absolutely destroyed them 41-6. And, you know, from the first kickoff where Raheem Shaheed ran that first kickback, you could just see the 49ers just the air just knocked out of them. Right. They were without George Kittle. They had a couple of other injuries, but, you know, they still had some players out there. But you could tell McCaffrey, they took McCaffrey out of the game. They forced, you know, Purdy to have to beat them down the field. And that was just. It was over from there. It was done. So, again, they destroyed the Niners, went on to beat the Rams in the NFC Championship game, 31-27 to advance to the Super Bowl. And I know a lot of people, you know, have messed with me about my Bears not making it to the NFC Championship game, but it's okay. You know, great year for us, going 11-6, getting that 12th win in the playoffs. To get to the divisional round, beating Green Bay twice, just, you know, being able to come back the way that the Bears did in six or seven of those games, having those comebacks and just seeing the way that this team grew throughout the year was just great. So, don't worry, you know, this is, we were a year ahead of schedule. I think that we had the right tools in place, the right coaches in place. And now we just got to get, you know, better on the defensive line and at defensive end and safety, tighten up some areas, and we'll be back next year, man. And this time, you know, NFC Championship game in Chicago, claiming that. But again, this is not about the Bears, you know, but just wanted to, you know, shout out the Bears, shout out Caleb Williams. But let's focus, man. Let's get back on track. Let's talk about the Super Bowl matchup. So I just told you how the Seahawks got where they are. And let's talk about how the Patriots got there. So they were number two, the number two seed in the AFC. They dominated the Chargers 16-3 in the wild card round. They ended up beating the Texans 28-16 in the divisional round. And then they beat the Broncos 10-7 in a ultimate snooze fest in the AFC Championship game to advance to the Super Bowl. And again, that's how both teams ended up getting where they are in the Super Bowl. And, you know, I really wanted to take a look at both of the teams and looking at their, you know, leaders statistically, you know, their season leaders. And then we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, how they match up across the board. And so, well, I'll save, you know, a little bit more in-depth analysis of this for next week leading up to the Super Bowl, because I definitely want to dive a little bit deeper into it. But I will be, you know, just giving you guys a preview, a snapshot of this matchup, and I will give you my pick. Because I just want to give you my pick now. It's not going to change. So I'm going to go ahead and give you my pick before we wrap up today. But again, let's look at, you know, both of these teams. So season leaders for both sides. Obviously, you have Sam Darnold for the Seattle Seahawks. He's been dealing with the oblique injury, right? But, you know, on the year, he has 25 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. Drake May, and he's thrown for 4,048 yards. Drake May, on the other hand, he is 31 touchdowns on the year and 8 interceptions. So a little bit better touchdown to interception ratio for Drake May. And he's thrown for 4,394 yards. So, you know, Drake May, Sam Darnold, both very productive years. In their season. Now, from a rushing standpoint, Kenneth Walker, a 1,000-yard rusher this year for the Seattle Seahawks. We know what Kenneth Walker can do. He has 5 touchdowns on the year. And then you have Trevion Henderson for the New England Patriots. He has 9 touchdowns on the year. If just finished at, you know, he finished under 1,000 yards, 911 yards. And I think that, you know, a lot of that, and similar, honestly, similar with Kenneth and Charbonnet in Seattle. Henderson, you know, they do split carries, you know, throughout the year. So, you know, but almost he was just right there, almost at 1,000 yards on the year. But from a receiving standpoint, you got Jackson Smith and Jigba for the Seattle Seahawks, 1,793 receiving yards this year and 10 touchdowns. That is outstanding. And then you have Stephon Diggs, 1,013 receiving yards with 4 touchdowns on the year, just 4 touchdowns. And then you have, from a defensive standpoint, you have Leonard Williams with 7 sacks on the year. And then you have Landry for the Patriots with 8.5 sacks on the year. So, and then from a tackling standpoint, you know, Jones for the Seattle Seahawks, he leads with 126 tackles. That's their linebacker. And then you have Spillane for the Patriots with 97 tackles on the year. So he's their leader in tackles. So just want to give you guys both of the season leaders for both of those teams. Now let's talk about, you know, which quarterback has the most to prove in this matchup. Is it Sam Darnold or is it Drake May? And my answer to that question is 100% Drake May. Why do I say that Drake May has more to prove than Sam Darnold? You look at Sam Darnold, right? I don't think Sam Darnold has, you know, more to prove specifically because, you know, last year he led the Vikings to 14-3. So we were able to see what Sam Darnold could do. He finally had that huge breakout, you know, year. It took him some time. It took him a few destinations, but in the right coaching, in the right scheme, we see that, you know, that could bring the best out of a quarterback. And so I remember all the hype Darnold had coming out of the draft, coming out of USC. And you know, in my mind, I was like, look, he was at USC. I don't know what all the hype is about Sam Darnold. He didn't, you know, impress me at all. But what he was able to do last year and really having everything clicked and really having a true, you know, number one receiver in Justin Jefferson, like, he was lights out. He was deadly. Now, in the playoffs, that was another story. Didn't show that same production. But, yeah, I mean, he balled out last year. So he was able to show, you know, us what we needed to see. And then coming back this year and having another 14-3 season, and this time around advancing, you know, getting the number one seed, advancing to the NFC Championship game, getting to the Super Bowl. I think, you know, Darnold is proving that he is a quarterback that is, you know, here to stay, and he's solid, right? And he can lead he can lead a team. Drake May, on the other hand, I mean, he's a younger guy, right? Still, you know, obviously he's in his second year. Impressive to be able to get to the Super Bowl, but May, he was 10 of 21 for 86 yards in the AFC Championship game. I mean, I know the weather got bad in the second half, but, you know, those first three quarters, it wasn't terrible. And to only throw for 86 yards, I mean, look, if Caleb Williams did something like that, they would be sitting up here, you know, calling him the worst, most overrated quarterback in that class. But you got Drake May, you know, 10 of 21 for 86 yards, averaged 4 yards passing, and had a QB rating of 62. In the AFC Championship game, and being sacked 15 times in the playoffs, you know, in total. So he's been carried by this defense, right? And that, look, again, there's been defenses that have carried quarterbacks, right, and gotten them to the Super Bowl. This is another example of that. If it was not for the New England Patriots defense and Bo Nix being hurt and the Broncos having to turn to Jarrett Stidham, to play quarterback, the Broncos would have smoked the Patriots in that game. I mean, if we're keeping it 100, like, the Broncos would have smacked the Patriots easy in that game. But Patriots defense stepped up and did what they needed to do. You know, and in Cam Newton's words, my boy, shout out to, you know, Cam Newton, Westlake alum, down here in Atlanta, Georgia. Drake May is a game manager, not a game changer. Again, this is not to discredit what he's done, but all I'm saying is Drake May has more to prove than Darnold, because we have not seen, you know, Drake May be the reason why, you know, the Patriots have won in these playoffs. I think the defense has been a huge part of the reason why they won. That even in that first matchup, against the Chargers, I think they only scored one offensive touchdown, and I think the rest of it was field goals. So, and that touchdown came in like the, I think it was like the late in the first quarter or in the second, something like that. It was one touchdown and three field goals, and they won that game. But the defense held the Chargers to 3 points. In the matchup with the Texans, the defense forced what, 4 or 5 turnovers in that game? I mean, made C.J. Stroud look crazy. And in the AFC Championship game, held the Broncos to 7 points. But they were only offensively, as much as they got the ball, they were only able to put up 10 points offensively. So, again, how are they going to score points? That's the biggest question. Where are they going to get the points from? Now, the weather's going to be better. I'm pretty sure they're going to, you know, put some drives together and put some points up. But are those points going to be touchdowns, or are they going to be field goals? Biggest question, right? So, again, Drake May, for me, in my opinion, in the Super Bowl, has more to prove. Let's look at the postseason stats. And before we do that, you guys are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audio Boom, and on YouTube. And what I want everybody to do is stop what you're doing. Make sure you click that button at the bottom of your screen to subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're listening to one of these streaming apps, make sure you subscribe to the show on the app. You'll see an area that on each one of these apps will ask to subscribe. You can leave a rating. You can leave a comment, especially under the YouTube channel on there, each video. Please leave comments, any suggestions, any thoughts, any opinions about anything that I'm talking about, anything that I've said, any of my takes. If you have something to say about that, please leave and drop your comments so that I can bring them to the show in any next episode that I broadcast, man. I want to have a conversation with you guys and want to keep it fresh and welcome all, you know, ideas, welcome all opinions and again, all thoughts because all of y'all are my family, man, and I love my family. So look, tap in with me. But and again, I appreciate all of the love, all of the support, everybody that has continued to rock with me, continue to listen to me and support me up to this point, man. And look, as Michael Jordan said, man, the ceiling is the roof, man. The ceiling is the roof. again, let's talk about the just a little bit more about the offensive and defensive leaders for these teams, just to kind of unpack a little bit more about that. So, you know, offensively, you know, with Drake May, he in the postseason, he's top. He's number four in passing out of the quarterbacks in the postseason with 533 yards. Stevenson for the Patriots, he's number one in rushing with 194 yards. And then you have Kenneth Walker for the Seahawks. He's actually number three in rushing in the playoffs this year with 178 yards. And Drake May is five with 141 yards rushing. Now, from a receiving standpoint, Jackson Smith and Jigba, he is number four in the playoffs in receiving with 172 yards receiving so far. With from a defensive standpoint, for these teams, you look at Chazon from New England. He has three sacks in the postseason so far. Excuse me, and then you got Dexter Lawrence with two sacks in the postseason. From a team standpoint, defensively, the Patriots are number one in the postseason in yards allowed, so 209 yards a game. Again, like I told you guys, this defense has carried this Patriots team to the Super Bowl, and again, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that at all. The Bears in 2006 07 season, that defense carried us to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman as our quarterback. So now Rex made some good throws in the playoffs, but again, that defense was the reason why the Bears got to the Super Bowl. And not only are the Patriots number one in yards allowed, but they also are number one in the postseason in sacks with 12 in the postseason. So, but on the flip side, the Seattle Seahawks are number one in turnovers in the postseason with four differential is four in turnovers for the Seahawks. So again, that's the full rundown and preview of the Super Bowl 60 matchup between the Seattle Seahawks and New England Patriots. Again, I will give you guys my prediction and want to save some more in-depth analysis of this matchup for next week's show as we continue to unpack the matchups leading up to the Super Bowl next Sunday. With that being said, man, next up, I want to talk about a legend in Chicago that just had his jersey retired. And I'm talking about Derrick Rose, man. Shout out to Derrick Rose. Again, legendary Chicago Bulls player. I had to put my Bulls stuff on, man. Y'all see the hat, y'all see the jersey for everybody that's looking on YouTube, man. The Chicago Bulls, they retired his number one jersey on last Saturday night after the Bulls had a great home win, 106-103 over the Boston Celtics, with Kevin Huerter hitting a three-pointer in the corner to give the Bulls the 106-103 lead with a few, it was, 3 seconds on the clock when he shot it. Three or so seconds, and a huge shot, man, right before the buzzer. And, you know, obviously Boston had another chance to shoot it, but not enough time to get that off. So, you know, great ceremony at the end of that game. Obviously, Derrick Rose was very emotional, after hearing, different stories and tributes from former teammates like Taj Gibson and Luol Deng and his former coach and Joakim Noah and Tom Thibodeau was in attendance as well. Everybody was able to share, different stories and how, Derrick Rose impacted them as a teammate, as a friend, as a brother. And then, obviously you had Derrick Rose have an opportunity to come up there and deliver a speech honoring his mother, Brenda, for, you know, and his brothers, his ex-teammates. There was a sold out crowd in Chicago. I wish I could have been there, man. But it was insanely cold down there in Chicago. Let me get a drink of water real quick, y'all. All right, I'm back. Doing a lot of talking, man. Got it. Look, stay hydrated, man. Make sure y'all drink y'all some water. But again, sold out crowd in Chicago, man. Just to hear what Derrick Rose had to say, and it was cool to actually see him get up there and speak, because we know Derrick Rose is the guy who's been quiet. He hadn't really, you know, been as vocal on, you know, as a player. But the older he got, you know, he developed more of a voice. And just to see, you know, everything that he had to say about his time in Chicago, a true Chicago kid, right, from Inglewood, and, you know, just coming up and being able to be the number one overall pick and drafted to Chicago was I remember that day, man, when the Bulls got the lottery pick. And I remember thinking, like, man, we're really about to get Derrick Rose. This is insane. So, you know, with this retirement, just wanted to kind of give you guys a little bit of the stats for, well, not really stats, but just kind of run down, you know, what this means. So Rose actually became the fifth, you know, Bulls player in history to have his jersey number retired. So he joins Jerry Sloan, Bob Love, of course, Michael Jordan, the GOAT, Scottie Pippen. And so the Bulls also had banners to honor former head coach Phil Jackson and former general manager Jerry Krause. But again, he is the fifth Bulls player to have his jersey number retired. And Derrick Rose actually had this to say during the ceremony. He said, look, this journey was never about me. He said it was about creating the synergy that somehow people from the city can pull from. And somehow I was that beacon or that vessel for that from hooping. Now, again, I said Rose, being a Chicago native, played 8 seasons with the Bulls after being selected number one overall in 2008. And he was named the Rookie of the Year in 2008-2009, made 3 All-Star teams. And in 2011, he became the youngest player in NBA history to receive the MVP award. So, you know, a year ago, you know, when they announced it, that this jersey retirement was going to take place, Rose said that he wanted his jersey retirement to be a celebration for everyone, right? And he really and truly made it about everyone, from his mother to his kids to his wife to his teammates to his former coach to staff members to childhood friends and teammates, right? Made it all about them and how they each individually contributed to getting him to where he stood, right, where he is today. And a guy who's looking to, you know, get into the business side of things, right? So, hey, maybe, look, you never know. We may see Derrick Rose in the, you know, front office or something with the Bulls one of these days, because Lord knows we need it. We need some different leadership. Because our GM and these guys, they have no idea what they're doing, y'all. So we're going to pray for our Bulls. But, again, shout out to my boy Derrick Rose. Great accomplishment, man. And excited to see what's next for him. And let's keep it right there in the NBA, because we had some breaking news that happened this week, just the other day, about Giannis Antetokounmpo. I said that right, y'all. Been practicing. he's actually ready to find a new home, ready to move on from the Milwaukee Bucks ahead of the February 5th trade deadline. Now, this is huge, right? Because there's going to be a lot of different things going down in the next few days. I expect this weekend to be heated up with a lot of notifications of trades and things like that. Several teams have made aggressive offers for Giannis to get him from the Milwaukee Bucks. Who are now starting to listen to those. Some teams that have jumped out in the mix are the Miami Heat, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the New York Knicks, the Golden State Warriors. And I've heard The Houston Rockets is a team to watch out for as well. They said multiple teams actually received the sense that the Bucks were more open than ever to trade Giannis between now and the deadline over the last few days. They did, Milwaukee indicated to the teams that are interested that the organization is not in a rush to complete a move and is willing to navigate his future in the offseason if it's believed the price point of a blue chip talent, blue chip young talent, and or a surplus of draft picks isn't met, which means that in simpler terms, if they feel like they're not going to get the compensation that they deserve, they want back for Giannis, being that of a young superstar or young superstar in the making, plus a plethora of draft picks, right? Three or four draft picks plus a player, they're going to hold off on doing anything until the offseason. So, and they can also see what teams are able to offer more appealing draft picks in June. So, we'll continue to monitor that. But right now, the Milwaukee Bucks, had Giannis there for 12 plus years. They currently, right now, this season, they're 18-27 and 12th in the Eastern Conference. And I think Giannis is injured right now as well. So it's time to part ways, right? I mean, he was able to bring them a championship, was able to finally get over that hump. So I think that Giannis doesn't owe Milwaukee anything. Would love to see him in Chicago, but I know that's not going to happen. Just dreams. But yeah, man, we'll continue to monitor this for sure. And definitely keep our eyes open to see who will ultimately land Giannis out of Milwaukee. So with that being said, man, want to talk about something that I found very puzzling that happened in the NFL as well. But again, before that, again, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audio Boom, and of course on YouTube. And now what I want everybody to do, if you hadn't done it already, make sure you click that subscribe button at the bottom of your screen to subscribe to the YouTube channel. This will give you updates, keep you in the loop when shows are posted, if and when I ever go live. You will be notified that a show is happening so that you can quickly tune in and be a part of the show. And again, I appreciate everybody's love, their support, and your motivation and encouragement to me up until this point, man, and continue to rock with me, man, because I got more to come. But again, let's talk about something that was puzzling me, right? So the NFL released the candidates that were eligible for the Hall of Fame, okay? And it was announced that Bill Belichick will not be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I thought that was absolutely insane, right? When I saw that, I couldn't believe it, right? And it says the eighth, and I'm just going to read you guys a little bit of this article just to give some context, and then I'll give you my thoughts, excuse me, my thoughts and opinions on this whole situation. So again, Bill Belichick, 8-time Super Bowl winning coach, not a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? So they had voting earlier this month. Belichick actually fell short of the 40 out of 50 votes that he needed for induction to the Pro Football Hall of Fame during, again, his first year of eligibility. Now, this obviously was a shock to everybody around the world, and people are puzzled, they're confused, they're pissed off, they're disappointed, as they should be. Bill Belichick even said to one of his associates that six Super Bowls isn't enough. I mean, he won six Super Bowls as the head coach of the New England Patriots and had two more as a defensive coordinator in New York with the Giants. Eight Super Bowls isn't enough. Like, I really and truly don't understand that. Now, several sources who spoke to the coach over the weekend described, you know, Bill Belichick as being, again, puzzled. He's disappointed. Inability to get 80% of the support from the current Hall committee members. Okay. Now, this actually is going to get a little bit more interesting, right? There's another source that said that politics kept Bill Belichick out, right? And he doesn't feel like this is a reflection of his accomplishments. And I saw something else also that said that, you know, with Bill Belichick, we know that he hasn't been kind to the media as well. So they tried to throw the fact that, you know, the way that he treated the media wasn't the best. That all plays into your resume when you're, you know, being looked at as a Hall of Fame candidate, right? So I thought that was interesting. Now, there's one thing that I really found very interesting as well. So, Bill Belichick, he has an NFL coaching record of 333-178, including the playoffs, right? His career victories are second only to Don Shula's 347. And he's considered by most fans, obviously, and Hall voters to be first ballot. Now, the Hall is composed mostly of veteran NFL reporters. It includes football figures. Former general manager Bill Polian is one of them. Former coach Tony Dungy is one of them. You know, again, both of them are Hall of Famers. Now, the interesting part of this is that multiple sources actually said that that Spygate situation and the Deflategate situation, right, where they were, you know, the Patriots were, you know, accused of the cheating. You know, they were looking at practices on film, like filming other teams' practices. And then also the footballs were deflated. They weren't blown up or inflated to the right the right amount that they should have been. And then also the twin cheating scandals during the Patriots championship run. So all three of those, Spygate, Deflategate, and the twin cheating scandals during their championship run, they came up in those deliberations, right, among their voters. And so there was a voter who spoke on the condition as an anonymous source. And he said that Polian who is a Kraft supporter, and Kraft is the owner of the Patriots. He said that they believe that Polian, or they said that Polian said that he told some of the voters that he believed that Bill Belichick should wait a year as a penalty for Spygate and the 2007 cheating scandal that cost the team a first round draft pick. So again, he said that he told voters that he believed that he should have to wait a year before being inducted as a penalty for those different scandals. And with those scandals, you know, Commissioner Roger Goodell also ended up fining Bill Belichick $500,000 and the Patriots $250,000. So, again, they said the only explanation for that outcome was the cheating stuff. That's what one of the veteran Hall of Fame voters said on Tuesday, and it really bothered some of the guys. Now, Tom Brady obviously was going to come out and have, you know, his viewpoint on it, says that, you know, I don't understand it. He said, if he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, there's really no coach that should ever be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And I agree with that, right? You know, again, I'm not in any way okaying the cheating and things that happened or anything like that. So I do think that they were right to consider those things, right, to have those things in consideration, right, because that's something that's on your resume. That's something that people remember, and that's something that you were fined for. You know, as a coach, you got the organization was fined for that, right? So, but on the other hand, you look at, you know, the accomplishments and the production and what they were able to do. You're like, dang, what more could he have possibly done? But I'm gonna tell y'all something I just thought about, right? And it's almost like you go into a job, right? A job interview, okay? And you have the perfect resume, right? You have all the experience, you have all of the accolades, you have, you know, everything, right? You look like the all-time perfect candidate. But when you get in that interview, there's something that's off. There's something that they notice. There's something in, you know, your experiences or the way that you convey or present yourself that seems a little, you know, it seemed off, right? And it doesn't align with what they're looking for at that point in time. And so you're not selected. I kind of look at it from that standpoint, right? Because Bill Belichick, his resume is incredible, right? I just told y'all what the man did. It's incredible. All those Super Bowls, all the guys that you know, he's coached and all those things. And but it still wasn't enough because there was something on his resume that just it rubbed him the wrong way. Right. And I'm not saying, obviously, that, you know, people going to job interviews, they find out like, oh, it's true. You could say that too. Like, hey, they found out in the background check. And that might be an even better thing to kind of throw into the mix too, right? You go into that interview with the perfect resume and all the accomplishments and all the accolades and everything like that, all the experience. But they do that background check and they find out, you know, some things that hey, that's not going to cut it, right? They're not going to select you for that. And I think that they're trying to send a message here. They're saying that, look, we... integrity and all of those things, those and the way that you treat people in the media and all those things, like, they look at all those things, right? And you know, unfortunately, you know, I think that Bill Belichick is a first ballot Hall of Fame coach? I do. I do think that, but at the same time, I can understand why they would make him wait. I get it, right? After reading on it and seeing that as a reason why. And looking at those scandals, I can understand that part of it. But if we remove that out of it, there's no reason why he shouldn't be a first ballot Hall of Famer, right? So I do think that is the only reason why those scandals, the cheating, that stuff like that. I get it. That's why they say cheaters never win. They win some, but they definitely lose some. And this is a moment where he lost. Right. May have won those Super Bowls, but he lost an opportunity to be our first ballot Hall of Famer. So there's some people in there that just, again, and these are probably, you know, people that Bill Belichick has probably rubbed the wrong way or don't, you know, again, we don't know who voted against it. We don't know who voted for him. And we just won't know those things. But it just goes to show you, man, it's never promising. It's never a shoe-in, man. You have to have and nobody's perfect, but you gotta have a pretty, you know, especially like when it comes to scandals and like that, you don't want that to be under your name, and you don't want to be involved with stuff like that, right? So yeah, so there we have it. But let's talk about Super Bowl 60 again, man. Again, I'm not going to get super in depth with the analysis because I want to save some of that for next week. But looking at this matchup, man. The team that I'm going to pick and that I believe is going to win the Super Bowl is going to be the Seattle Seahawks. Again, I just told you all earlier that Drake May, you know, he has a lot to prove in this game. The offense has not been impressive. The defense has done their job, and they have, you know, done their thing and got the offense the ball back. But the Patriots, especially in that AFC Championship game, that just did not look like a team that was ready to compete for a Super Bowl. Defensively, they did, but offensively, they didn't. And I'm having a hard time figuring out where the points going to come from, because Seattle is a team, high scoring, offense that can go boom, boom, boom down the field, 1-2-3, and punch you in the mouth with a touchdown. They have some home run hitters in Jigba and Rashid Shaheed, and a nice solid running back in Kenneth Walker. Fortunately, they lost Charbonnet, but Kenneth Walker's still there. You know, they have a good solid tight end core. Their defense is lights out, and even better than, you know, the Texans defense that they faced and Denver's defense. Like, they're better than both of those defenses. They're fast, they're strong, they're quick. Like, where are they going to find the points? And it is the Super Bowl, right? I mean, we'll see, but in the weather conditions are going to be well. But I just see the Seahawks as being a team that is complete. They've been the best team all year. And, you know, I think that they're going to prove that again, you know, right? They've been right there at the top the whole year. So, I just see Seattle coming in, man. And, they're a 4.5 point favorite, but I think the Seahawks win by more than that. I got the Seahawks by at least 2 scores, at least. So, you know, I'm riding with Seattle. I'm an NFC guy anyway. Always rolling with the NFC unless it's the Packers, the Vikings, or the Lions. Never going to root for them to win the Super Bowl. But, again, NFC gave us a better playoffs. AFC playoffs were boring. But the NFC side, man, exciting games, right? Great matchups. So, I just look at Seattle as a team that's complete and not a whole lot of flaws on that team. So that's my pick, y'all. And again, I will get more into it leading up to the Super Bowl next week. Excited to dive a little more in depth in that as we're gathering more information leading up to that. But with that, man, I appreciate everybody rocking with me. I appreciate everybody tuning in, giving me some of your time, excuse me. And look, continue to rock with me, man. We'll do it all again next week. It's been real, y'all. Peace, love. And as always, I'm out, and I'll see y'all next week.